international human rights community, and especially with the creation of the International Criminal Court in The Hague. His name is Jeffrey Robertson. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or not. But he wrote an op-ed piece on May the 4th that was published in the Sydney Morning Herald. And regardless of the outcome, he does something down at the bottom of this piece that really just sort of grabbed me. And he said, just bear with me for a second. He writes, the obsessive belief of the U.S. in capital punishment alone among advanced nations is reflected in its rejoicing at the manner of bin Laden's demise. Barack Obama has most likely secured re-election by approving the execution. This may be welcome given the alternatives of Sarah Palin and Mike Huckabee, who have both urged that Julian Assange be hunted down in similar fashion, or Donald Trump. It is a set of summary execution. And this is the part I wanted to get to. This is clip. It was not always thus. When the time came to have men more steeped in wickedness than bin Laden, the Nazi leaders, the British government wanted them hanged within 6 hours of capture.
Churchill, right.
Yeah. The president, Harry Truman, demurred, citing the conclusion of Justice Robert Jackson that summary execution, quote,
cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
The weekend is mercifully over, and it is time to get back to the business of conversation radio, the pleasure of conversation radio. The joy of conversation radio. I am Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. And it is, in fact, Monday. Mondays being rather special creatures around here. Sorry, I was a little slow getting to the microphone, but I was trying to get bills paid. It really seems fitting insofar as it is, after all, Moran Monday, right? Yeah, it is. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. And the fact of the matter is, we have a surfeit of Morans. We have Morans of all manner, all stripe, all variety, all kind, all genus, and all species this evening. No kidding. We truly, truly do. That's right, hurry, hurry, hurry. It's Moran Monday on the Horn, and you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. Step right up. For less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you can peep behind this thin, thin cybernetic veil and see Morans the likes of which you may not have even imagined. No, we urge no children be brought in. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Hurry, 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 step right up. Moran Monday on the Horn. Oh, friends and neighbors, kitties and cousins, we've got Morans aplenty. We've even got a musical Moran for this evening. We've got monetary Morans, economic Morans, warmongering Morans, Morans! Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. No, really. Let's start with a little bit of a little bit from the mailbag, if you will. I got an email from our good buddy Horst earlier today. Horst is several time zones away, so he's probably not even listening live right now, but that's okay. He'll catch it on the podcast. You know, Horst is the one, is the individual who kindly provides audio clips of the program over at his YouTube page, Horzac, H-O-R-Z-A-C. Right? Right. So I got a note from Horst earlier today, and I thought it a worthy starter for the program this evening. Anytime you see an email that begins in anticipation of more on Monday, well, it kind of begs to be open, doesn't it? Horst writing in, by now I have no doubt that you've read in some depth about the charges of rape surrounding IMF head Dominique Strauss-Kahn. We've had some time to take the initial shock in and ride out the reflexive shocks of outrage at the callousness and brutality of his alleged acts. But even so, I have to say it took only about 12 seconds of reading into the early reports before I got a barrage of what the flags in the back of my brain. Are you kidding me? A 62-year-old man at the top of the International Monetary Fund who could have any kind of sex he wanted with any partner and with full privacy chose instead to physically overpower a woman 30 years younger than himself in order to force her to perform oral sex on him? I mean, Lord, even in prison they know enough to knock your front teeth out first. Attempt a more traditional rape before realizing, oh, whoops, uh-oh, this looks bad, don't it? And skedaddling for the nearest airport while dropping his cell phone but not his pants? Huh? It would seem that our good buddy Horst has really captured the essence of this whole kerfuffle that has taken up the for-profit media's attention for the better part of the day, in between that and talks about the debt ceiling. Horst kindly provides some excerptage on the reportage. This is a story about a Frenchman, of course, so we have to use as many French words as possible. Reportage. Is that French? I don't know. Nor do I much care. The IMF chief's sudden arrest has caused a sensation in France, where he has led opinion polls as the Socialist Party's likely candidate. Socialist Party. Likely candidate to challenge the unpopular President Nicolas Sarkozy in next year's election. Monsieur Strauss-Kahn was expected to leave his post soon to formally enter the presidential race. Gee, you're about to enter the race for president of France, and I mean, you know how this thing came about, right? I mean, this is, I don't know. Sandra also sent me this story early this morning, and yeah, I had those same flags go up as the ones that went up for Horst, and apparently went up for Sandra as well. You know, of course, that the account is that he was staying in a $3,000 a night. Good work if you can get it there at the IMF, I guess. He was staying in a $3,000 a night suite in a hotel in New York. And it had its own conference room, its own foyer. Got to say foyer and not foyer, because it's a story about a French guy. And it had its own bedroom and, you know, living room area. Just amenities, amenities, amenities. Well, apparently it was he was due soon to leave New York. Le York Nouveau. And was in the shower in his all together. He was in the bathroom, naked as the day he was Gallically born. And walked out of the bathroom stark naked to find the maid standing there. And I guess this is the difference between the Gallic mindset and the hillbilly mindset, because I would have jumped pretty nearly out in my skin and run back into said bathroom and said, come back later, please. Right? Yeah. But that's not what happened, at least according to the maid, and according to Interpol or whoever else, or the Port Authority or New York City's finest, whatever. No, he apparently took that opportunity to, well, you get the idea. But anyway, in the excerptage sent to me by Horst, it says, and this is from The Australian, Mr. Strauss-Kahn has played an important role in helping orchestrate rescue loan packages for countries facing disastrous debt since his appointment as IMF chief since 2007. He had been due to travel to Europe for a meeting with German Chancellor Angela Merkel to discuss the debt crises of Greece, Portugal, and Ireland, and was due to attend meetings this week with European finance ministers. Among other things, he was also a known critic of belt-tightening and austerity. I forget what the French word is, but he used a word to describe the austerity people that translates to English as madmen. So Horst says, now, number one, don't ever mistake me for someone who could get misty-eyed over the plight of an IMF CEO, or for someone who would ever put it past anyone in a position like that not to flaunt their status in outrageous and revolting ways. In all honesty, my instinctive populist democratic sensibilities led me first to conclude that this was just another case of the Blankenship class thumbing their noses at the rest of us proles while giving us a good thumb in the eye for dessert. For the simple fact that they could. But seriously, even if this is the most crooked, rapacious bastard in the history of IMF World Bank-level crooked, rapacious bastards, he must be brain-damaged to have ever done something like this in such a flagrant manner. This is like yank half my mustache off in the shower-level moronity. It doesn't compute. George Bush proved definitively that any moron can attain the office of the President of the United States with the right people on his side, but the IMF? That's serious. They don't just let any old damn bumpkin in there. Sort of along the same lines that I was thinking. Horst continues, don't get me wrong, I really don't want to get mixed up in the tinfoil hat society, but for the love of sweet, tasty Jesus, it's too cute. It has all the markings to me of the right wing whenever they go too far. It's like Iran giving up the hostages on the day of St. Reagan's inauguration, and any number of other coincidences too numerous to recount now that were apparently coordinated with an overarching intent to insult, in unmistakable terms, the intelligence of any dissenter with an eye to the headlines and more than two brain cells to rub together. It smacks of the "they hate us for our freedoms" approach and all the damnable lies that unfortunately history probably won't record. Blech. This guy may turn out to be a genuine monster, and if so, power to the prosecution and a speedy punishment unto him. But given the places our government and media have taken us in recent years, my reaction at this point is that the whole damned thing stinks to the upper ionosphere of heaven. Oh, I mentioned Moran Monday, Horst says. I'm thinking of nominating myself. I'm a Kindle owner, and I love my new toy dearly. But I'm noticing now that when I go to buy a new book from the Amazon Kindle store, inexplicably the Kindle version is always at least 20% more expensive than the paperback. Where I live, that still works out in my favor, since I can deduct the expense of shipping via airmail, but if I lived in the States, most of what I order would be eligible for free shipping anyway. What gives? I just got a new book for about $20 in Kindle format that would have cost $12 in paper, minus, of course, those enormous charges for shipping. I get the feeling, though, that Amazon's having a jolly rogering session with us here. There should be no reason under the sun for an electronic copy of anything to cost more than its physical counterpart. I'm happy to do what I can to contribute to a tree-friendly reading future, but when the shadows grow long and the reflective mood sets in, I wonder, am I a moron? Signed, your recently out-of-work pal, Horse. Oh, yeah. apparently, Jim, whose French is far better than mine, answers, oui, c'est vrai. Et moi aussi, c'est incroyable, monsieur. Another Dreyfus case? Yeah, it really is. It's a little smelly, isn't it? And I don't mean like, you know, brie smelly. There's just... I mean, this really does. It smells like, you know, and bear in mind, Nicolas Sarkozy is a filthy right-winger of the French variety. And Monsieur Strauss-Kahn was deemed to be his greatest challenge in the upcoming election, especially in light of the fact that Monsieur Sarkozy is something less than popular. That whole screw the young people program that he put through didn't work out so well, no. Not at all. And this just miraculously did. Now, the guy does have, but come on, he's a Frenchman, a womanizing past. That's not me criticizing the French. That's me acknowledging that they have a different attitude about mores and sexuality and infidelity and outside. Yeah, right. He's had a couple of problems, maybe three. But really? Walked out of the bathroom, naked, 62 years old, and jumps the maid, 30 years his junior, and then does it again? No means we, I said. You know, it sounds like the plot to either Inspector Clouseau or Pepe Le Pew. Pick one. Sandra noting that the replacement for Strauss is a man named John Lipsky. John Lipsky was previously vice chairman of the J.P. Morgan Investment Bank. Lipsky earlier was J.P. Morgan's chief economist and Chase Manhattan Bank's chief economist. And he's already said he's quitting come later this summer. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff that... I mean, this reads like a John Grisham novel, doesn't it? Nice to see that our moneyed betters can behave as badly, as much like morons as we do sometimes. You know, us rednecks, common proles and stuff. Most of the time, we behave better than them. But you know, they don't show them. They don't show. Monsieur Strauss-Kahn on Cops in a wife-beater T-shirt with a half-drunk can of Budweiser in his hand. I also learned in reading the hit piece, and the New York Times and every other piece on this story was a hit piece. I also learned that he has been accused in France of being a caviar leftist because he is high up in the Socialist Party hierarchy. A caviar leftist. I guess that's the American equivalent of limousine liberal. Apparently it caused some sort of a big stink when he and his wife were seen getting into a Porsche that one of his friends owned. And the French right wing had a field day with that photograph. Ah, some socialists, some workers of the world unite. Well, yeah, okay, we'll unite in your Porsche 911 Turbo there. You know, all with a French accent, of course. You're right. See, it just stinks. It's just a little, you know, creepy. But there's ever so much more than that out there. Another story coming out of the New York Times this weekend prompted a note from our buddy Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist. That was the charming little five clicker headlined Secret Desert Force Set Up by Blackwater's Founder. Did you read this one? It really was. It was a five-clicker. It was a long one. By Mark Mazzetti and Emily B. Hager. Eric Prince, the founder and the billionaire founder of what was then known as Blackwater and is now known as Z, spelled with an X. It's like spelling Ed with a hyphen, you know, spelling Z with an X. It's E hyphen D, Ed. Or upgrade with two D's for a double dose of his pimpin' goodness. Now, Eric Prince has gone to work for the autocratic, to say the least, and in its Greek sense, tyrannical ruler of United Arab Emirates, and has recruited and begun training a private army made up of South Africans and some American trainers and a bunch of fascists from Colombia. Because, you see, the dictator of Abu Dhabi, a man named Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, who, if I was in his country, could have my head cut off for calling him a dictator of Abu Dhabi, he wanted an army that he knew he could count on to kill Muslims. So he turned to Eric Prince, who had sort of slipped out of the limelight and has tried to stay out of it, but by this story and others has found himself back in it as being the principal agent for recruiting this non-Muslim security, so-called security force, for the tyrant of Abu Dhabi. The reason they have to be non-Muslim? He wants the tyrant of Abu Dhabi wants to make sure that he has a security force that is willing to shoot open fire on Muslims. And generally speaking, Muslims don't like to do that to other Muslims. That part of the teaching apparently sticks. Not like Western Europe, where some English Catholics can go kill French Catholics, can go kill Spanish Catholics, can go kill German Catholics, can go kill Austrian Catholics, can go kill Italian Catholics. No, it actually sticks over there. Muslims, generally speaking, don't like to kill other Muslims unless they're doing it for the religious favor and fervor of Allah. They don't like to do it for secular reasons. This was, like I said, it was a five-click story, and it is well worth the time. It is disturbing, because Mr. Prince, well, there's a paragraph. For Mr. Prince, the foreign battalion is a bold attempt at reinvention. He is hoping to build an empire in the desert. See, he went over there because stuff started getting a little hot for him here at home, so he fled his native soil so as to avoid any potential actual responsibility for the filthy things that he did with Blackwater during the course of the Iraq War. For Mr. Prince, the foreign battalion is a bold attempt at reinvention. He is hoping to build an empire in the desert. Far from the trial lawyers, congressional investigators, and Justice Department officials, he is convinced worked in league to portray Blackwater as reckless. Well, hell, I've never portrayed Blackwater as reckless. We've portrayed Blackwater as a bloodthirsty gang of thuggish mercenaries. Mainly because they are. He sold the company last year, but in April, a federal appeals court reopened the case against four Blackwater guards accused of killing 17 Iraqi civilians in Baghdad in 2007. Of course, that story's just the tip of the iceberg. Blackwater is murder for hire. So he starts a new company called Reflex Responses. Why does that sound like an 80s band? Oh, no, that was Relax. That was Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Obtained another multi-million dollar contract to protect a string of planned nuclear power plants and to provide cybersecurity. He hopes to earn billions more, the former employee said, by assembling additional battalions of Latin American troops for the Emiratis and opening a giant complex where his company can train troops for other governments. See, you don't want your own countrymen in your own security forces when you are a tyrannical autocratic dictator, because you never know when the Arab Spring is going to find its way to your door, and you might need to just mow down some women, some children, some mothers, and some fathers peacefully protesting in the name of greater democratic reforms, right? Right. So you bring in some fascists from Colombia who have an old and disgusting history of doing things like murdering trade union activists in support of the fascist government that holds sway in Colombia. This is a fascinating article and far too long to read any significant passages from. But we did get this note from Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist. And by the way, you know that Eric Prince is a fundamentalist, right? Yeah, one of those rapture-ready people. I wonder if he's packing his bags to go on May the 21st up into the clouds of joy and meet Jesus in the moronosphere. Or does he need to pack his... I don't know. Will he rapture naked? You know, that's one of the central issues for these millennialist weirdos, aren't it? Are we rapturing with our clothes on, Muriel, or are we going naked? Because I'm hoping it's clothes. Especially when you consider the view of the heathens as we're floating up in the sky. So Joe Ray says, here's a link to a news article about Eric Prince and his Christian crusade. This is what happens when empires like America hire mercenaries. They spread to every nation that seeks the same kind of power as the empire. You got that? They spread to every nation that seeks the same kind of power as the empire. Now, here is some inside information from an Iraq war vet, Joe B. and that and all. Regular troops idolize mercenary outfits like Blackwater. Most grunts dream of being hired by these thug war profiteers. They, regular soldiers, see mercenaries as elite troops that get rich during war. Because of the education level of American soldiers and the ideology that is indoctrinated in our modern military, it would be very easy to convince troops that American civilians are the enemy. Just as easy as it is to convince these mercenaries that it ain't no big deal to fire on a group of unarmed Muslims. Same, same. Pearls is pearls. Right? Yeah. It would be very easy to convince troops that American civilians are the enemy. Another bit of info on soldiers. They already have a negative view of civilians. They see civilians as weak and ungrateful. This is why I hate all the support your troops BS. Sooner or later, these mercenaries will come back to America, and then we will have to deliver them the final solution. I have no hope, says Joe, that our government will be able to end the growing mercenary threat in the world, because our government will do the same thing that the UAE is doing, hire mercenaries to kill civilians. I just hope I'm not too old or too sick when the time comes, or dead. I'd hate to be late for the party. Anyway, says Joe, and this ain't no joke, here's my advice. Stay in shape, learn how to fight, and keep a full tank of gas in your car. One last tip. Train the little ones how to shoot. Scary, isn't it? at least it is to me. Very scary. But I can't particularly argue with Joe's line of reasoning. Although it gives me the it gives me the flop sweats just to think about it. But of course, Joe does note that sort of indirectly ties into this other story. There is a willingness to lionize the legions. Troops, legions, whatever. You remember sometime during the Iraq War when they were transformed by the imaging and publicity and messaging department of the Bush White House and the relentless, merciless, remorseless right-wing PR machine that were transmogrified from wounded soldiers into wounded warriors? Yeah, me too. Over at Mediaite, well, in line with that sort of aggrandizement, over at Mediaite, a story that in which I took no pleasure whatsoever in reading, because I don't like being correct about things like this. You'll recall, maybe it was Thursday. Yeah, because the show fell apart on Friday. I'm just glad to have bandwidth back. Sorry about that. It was Thursday when I mentioned that maybe we ought to start just getting ourselves tattooed with brand names all over. Because that's all we exist as to corporate America, is consumers of things. We are to be commercialized, profitized, prioritized, capitalized. Yeah, you get the idea. That leads to a very disturbing place down the road if it's not already disturbing enough right here. John Bershad, writing over at Mediaite, says, "Today we learned that members of SEAL Team 6 are very concerned about the safety of themselves and their family in regards to retaliation for their mission that took out Osama bin Laden. That's probably why nobody's giving them parades. They don't want them. It was on May the 12th when Defense Secretary Robert Gates spoke at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. He said, "We are very concerned about the security of our families and your families and our troops, and also these elite units that are engaged in things like that. And without getting into any details, I would tell you that when I met with the team last Thursday, they expressed a concern about that, and particularly with respect to their families. Frankly, a week ago Sunday in the Situation Room, we all agreed that we would not release any operational details from the effort to take out bin Laden. That fell apart on Monday the next day." And, you know, there's a reason. That would be a logical point of retaliation, wouldn't it? Yeah. Well, imagine that in conjunction with what I said on Thursday about the wholesale capitalization and reduction, reductio ad profit, that is the stock in trade of corporate America. It has come to light, and this is sickening. I mean, this is really disgusting. I think disgusting was the word that Maura used when she read my Facebook post about this. It is. It's disgusting. It turns out that the Walt Disney Company has filed for and successfully trademarked the phrase SEAL Team 6. Really? You know, trademarked. As in, they own the words. There can be no SEAL Team 6 action figures that are not Walt Disney licensed SEAL Team 6 action figures. There can be no SEAL Team 6 cargo pants that aren't Disney licensed SEAL Team 6 cargo pants. No SEAL Team 6 toothbrushes. No SEAL Team 6 energy drinks. No SEAL Team 6 ammunition. Because do you have any doubt that somewhere in the fervent brain of some marketing genius that, by God, you know, we could have SEAL Team 6 instant breakfast and SEAL Team 6 ham, and we could have SEAL Team 6 toothbrushes and toothpaste, because SEAL Team 6 men always have a pretty smile. We could probably cross-promote and cross-market with Nike and have SEAL Team 6 cross-trainers. By the way, guess how long it took them? Are you disgusted? Are you as disgusted as I am by this? I mean, this is sickening. This is like trademarking. Well, it is. It's trademarking the U.S. military. It is reducing the United States military, publicly funded, such that it still is, to being little more than a vehicle for profit generation. And God almighty, you know, sure, everybody needs to make money at stuff. I think the Horn's the last institution out there that's not trying to make money, just trying to get the bills paid. But everybody's got to make money. It's the nature of the beastly world in which we live. But is there nothing that we will not subject to the profit motive? If there'd been any KIAs in SEAL Team 6, would Walt Disney have trademarked it and cross-promoted it for SEAL Team 6 coffins? As John Bershad over at Mediaite writes, hey, this is for the best. If major corporations don't instantly try to capitalize and wring every buck out of everything that happens, then the terrorists truly will have won. Yeah, they applied for the trademark 2 days after the news came out on May 1st. You think I was just making stuff up, don't you? Here's what the trademark applications cover. Clothing, footwear, headwear, toys, games, entertainment and education services, among other things. That's from the application. John Bershad notes, nothing says Merry Christmas like an ornament depicting a guy shooting Osama bin Laden in the face. Headwear? SEAL Team 6 watch caps, little patches, sure. God, I wasn't alive at the time, but I was told about it by my parents who were. I remember when prophetizing on war was at least a little bit more patriotic in nature. Jeez. Once upon a time, before the Second World War, Lucky Strike cigarettes came in a green pack with that red and black bullseye on it. With the entry of the United States into the Second World War, Lucky Strike packs became what we came to recognize as, eponymous. White pack with the bullseye on it. And early on, it was made clear that the packs were going to white paper because the green dye was needed for the war, what was called then the war effort. The United States doesn't do war efforts anymore. Ignorant old white guy just runs it up on the credit card and then waits for somebody else to come along so he can be blamed for it. You know, the new guy. But having given up their green dye, Lucky Strike announced Lucky Strike has gone to war. And the packs remained white even after the war ended. But this is about, 100 million light years past that? You know, I think it's probably as good a thing overall that the Walt Disney Company doesn't know the identities of SEAL Team 6 as it is that the terrorists don't. Because, by God, the Walt Disney Company would be on them like ducks on a June bug. Come here, son! Yeah, just put this tourniquet around your arm. We're going to draw out about a pint. And then we'll do SEAL Team 6 comic books printed with real SEAL Team 6 blood. And you know it's the truth. Come here, son. We're going to give you a couple of $1 million. Here, rub some of this here shaving cream on your face and shave for us with one of these SEAL Team 6 17-bladed razors and talk about how smooth it is and how this shave is ever bit as smooth as it was smooth when y'all went in and shot Osama in the face. Can you do that for us, son? Thought you could. You think they wouldn't do it? You know damn good and well they would. They're that sick. The profiteers and the marketers and the capitalizers. They are that sick. But I guess Moran Monday is the kind of place where you find that kind of sick, isn't it? Sick. Yeah. And we have further evidence of sick. Remember how a minute ago I said you elect some Moran who runs up the debt and then waits and blames it on the next guy? Yeah. Well, I've got an example of that. Oh, Ron and Raleigh, by the way. No, Bob, SEAL Team 6 replica BB rifle with a compass in the stock. You put your eye out, kid! Behind the cornbread curtain, that's a SEAL Team 6. 22 caliber semi-automatic rifle with a compass in the stock. William noting, hey, can I trademark the William porn action figures? Oh, jeebus. Jim noting, reflex responses? More Nazi euphemisms? Mercenary condottiera? Guns for hire? Murder incorporated? Where's Albert Anastasia? But no. I got something for you to hear here. And it's not exactly a bumper. We're playing this for journalistic purposes. Ray Stevens is back. they will be running the baggers and the birthers and the tenthers and the fourteenthers and the corpsers and the booger eaters and the oatmeal dribblers will be running, not walking, but running over to Amazon and iTunes to download the Obama budget plan. Yeah, really. The Obama budget plan. We'll discuss this after it's played. And by the way, you know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And email to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Just give her a listen. I think if you listen carefully, you can probably hear Toby Keith in the background crying because he didn't come up with it himself.
Well, I told my wife we had to get control of the finances in our household. We had to sit down and make a budget we could live by. I said, we'll list our incomes and all our bills, so get the bills, honey, if you will. And she got them and stacked them on a table 3 pounds high. Now I work 2 jobs, and my wife cleans homes, and her daughter babysits, and the son mows lawns, but that budget wouldn't balance no matter how we tried. So I said, let's do what the government does. It works for them, it might work for us. So I forgot my ethics and morals and swallowed my pride. Took out every credit card we could get and loaded them up with the maximum debt and borrowed from friends and family and even took out loans overseas. I borrowed at work, had credit at the store till folks just wouldn't give us credit anymore. And I said, honey, the next step is clear to me. Now we've got money, Obama money. Yeah, we're printing it in the basement just as fast as we can. We're making money, Obama money. Yeah, we live in the Obama budget plan. Well, we didn't use the money to reduce our debt. There was a whole bunch of things we still wanted to get now that we had more money than ever before. So we built a deck and a patio, put in a pool, bought a second home, and took all our friends on vacation to Costa del Sol. Cause we got money, Obama money. Yeah, we're printing it in the basement just as fast as we can. We're making money, Obama money. Yeah, we're living the Obama budget plan. Budget ceiling, credit score, don't worry about that. I'll just print more. That money, Obama money. Yeah. Hey, honey, make a run to Office Depot. I need more paper. Hurry back. I got to pick up my new Cadillac this afternoon. And I'm printing you up a little surprise birthday stimulus package, too. Boy, I sure hope them spoil sport Republicans and Tea Party folks don't screw this up. Once you renounce any sense of decency, it gets easier and easier. You know, I think I'll just buy Boardwalk and Park Place. Hey, I wonder how much you want for that General Motors company there.
Ha, ha, ha. Ain't Ray Stevens just funny? Ho, ho, ho! Hope them Tea Partiers don't screw it up for everybody. Because that's that Obama budget plan. That's that Obama funny money. Stupid old right-wing turd. Doesn't seem to recollect that them Republicans that he's fond of were the ones run up the debt that they're so upset about. But see, it wasn't an upsetting debt till it was a debt that was in the hands of, you know, one of them. And you know how it is with them and debt? You know, the rent-a-sander, you know. Idiots. Did you catch some of those lines? It just gets easy once you've abandoned all morality and shame or something like that. Yeah, because, you know, but why am I not surprised with any of this crap? I mean, honestly. You know that, it was late on Friday, but then he sort of doubled down on it later. You know that Ron Paul, father of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, came out in defense of his weird little son. Of course, it was on Radio Rwanda. He picked right up on his son's the messaging theme that Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, things like that, that those are slavery. Those are the thing. It's the very same thing, I tell you, as having iron shackles on your legs, scars and welts from horse whippings on your back, bent over in the hot, hot South Carolina sun, picking cotton. Social Security is the same thing as that, right? Stunning, isn't it? Absolutely mind-bending. But be careful, because that's the way these freaks really are. They see equivalences. I mean, their whole world, the right-winger's mind, their entire world is just one long... It's one long Ray Stevens record playing backwards, where all the secret hidden messages are. Right? It's almost too much to contemplate. But that's where their heads really, really are. A right-winger thinks that the involuntary servitude of an entire population demographic for hundreds of years is the same thing as a rich man paying into Social Security. I mean, it's difficult for me, too. I can't make my head do those kinds of gymnastics. But apparently they can. How put upon must you feel? How devoid of anything resembling a moral compass must one have to so easily denigrate the horrific experiences of an entire class of people who were subjected to slow-motion genocide? I mean, you know that the average lifespan of an African slave in the Deep South was something around a little less than 50 years, right? You know that the infant mortality rate was ridiculous, and that the maternal postpartum death rate was equally so. that not in the minds of a right winger. Because in the minds of a right winger, what? In the mind of a right winger, the suffering of those people doesn't really matter because they're not really people.
We said you was 3/5 of a person, and you should have been happy with that, by God.
But if you ask these greedy, sick, avaricious punks, to pony up.
My God, they're being subjected to slavery. It's just like slavery.
How do you get there? How do you get from point A to point B with that and still have a functioning brain? I'm damned if I know the answer.
Maybe you do. 4 minutes before the hour. 3 minutes before the hour. If you want to jump into the conversation, I welcome you to do so. 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. We'll take a little break and come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Sidewise inside it. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Cool Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
And it is Moran Monday on the horn. The floor is open for your nominations. Bring them on. Where have I heard that phrase before? Yeah, it's about 4.5 minutes past the hour. Let's get some rousing conversation radio going here. But don't wait until 15 minutes before the program ends to chime in with your thoughts. Dial early, dial often, as the saying doesn't go. Okay? Okay. So let's see what's shaking on the phones. Standby. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's happening, man?
What happened Friday?
You know what? I was cruising along, and all my bandwidth disappeared.
Because you finally got to me after you lost the program, then you didn't hear me, so...
Yeah, it was highly frustrating, to say the very least. You know, those things happen, and I don't know... you know, I don't know if folks really know Cossack, but when you're in the middle of all this and it just decides to go completely sideways, it becomes highly frustrating. I mean, you know, kick the furniture frustrating.
Well, I'll believe it. Got a question for you.
Okay.
How is it and why is it that conservatives anywhere have any kind of credibility talking about morality when they have shown themselves to be the least moral of anyone out there? I mean, they're wailing, caterwauling about Bubba Clinton's blowjob in the Oval Office, how come none of them seem to pick up on any of these other, let's say,
any of the peccadillos of their, why they can't pluck the beams out of their own eyes?
Yeah. You know, guys like Ensign, who's constantly, you know, I'm a family values guy, same thing as Vitter, same thing as Coburn. All these people are so bloody moral, and yet they don't live by their morality. Hardly. Quite the opposite, as a matter of fact. And that's what I think, I really do think that Strauss-Kahn was set up. It's amazing what you can get some minimum wage drudge to say if you wave a bundle of bills in her face.
Is this the
Dominique Strauss-Kahn?
Yeah, no, but I mean, what I was thinking about was is this the line that was used with the Clinton scandal about it's amazing what happens when you drag a $100 bill through a trailer park?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, is that possible? She was an immigrant, and I don't want to impugn any crime victims' legitimacy or diminish any sort of horror if, in fact, it's something that she went through. But is just out of curiosity, your geography a little bit, maybe a little better than mine. Is Guinea a French speaking African nation?
As I recall, yes.
Because I believe she was Guinean.
Because there was a British Guinea and then there was a French Guinea.
I'm not sure, but she was from Guinea. That's what was reported.
Yeah.
This whole you know, the whole thing makes me feel really creepy because blame the rape victim is not a place that I ever want to go.
No. That's assuming that a rape even occurred.
I mean, he conveniently forgot his cell phone?
Yeah.
Because he had to get out in a hurry.
Oh, that's crap.
And yet he got on the Air France flight. It's not like he was running for the gate going, hold it, wait, whatever that would be in French. No. He was sitting there in his seat. They were getting ready to close the gate and taxi and fly to France.
Yeah.
And that's when the Port Authority police, acting on a tip from the New York NYPD, did what they did. But what you're highlighting here, Cossack, is the rabbit hole down which we all live these days. Because we know we can't trust the for-profit media. We know there's just not a hell of a lot of folks we can trust. And so it leaves us feeling, as Horst noted in his email, like you've got a tinfoil helmet on whether you want it or not. You know what I mean?
You have to have one on.
Because the guy does have a history. But then again,
what Frenchman doesn't?
See, I hate those kind of generalizations, but they really do. They've got a different attitude, right?
Yeah. But the thing is,
because during the Clinton debacle, the entire French nation was going, what? Quel? Huh? Quel? What?
Yeah.
And so the guy has a history of fooling around that may even rise to the level of oppressive sexual conduct. Now, Nicolas Sarkozy, being a right-winger, Would he be above using that to his own political advantage?
Oh, hell no.
Especially in light of the fact that there's a lot of people that hate his stinking guts?
Heck no. And the thing is, if Strauss-Kahn ran against him, he'd lose. It's as simple as that.
Who would lose? Pronoun trouble.
Sarkozy.
You think?
Absolutely. He is detested at this point. He is detested in France. Many of the French are starting to call him what I do, sarcoma.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nasty.
I mean, yeah, he's about as welcome as fire ants at a nudist retreat. Yeah.
So it's hard not to. It's hard not to feel just a little bit paranoid out of this, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and the problem of it is that this is de rigueur of conservatives attacking liberals. Is they always try to do it on the sexual plane, and that's why I'm saying I really don't see why anyone believes anything that comes out of the mouths of conservatives these days. I mean, especially after Lefebvre Ensign, Jesus Christ, I mean, you know.
Yeah, and let us know, Tom Coburn, still a free man. No target letter delivered from the U.S. Attorney's Office yet.
And it won't be.
I mean, if the payoff was illegal, then brokering the payoff was illegal, wasn't it, Cossack?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that was, you know, that was Tom Coburn out there riding around on the riding lawnmower or cutting his grass on that Saturday when the phone call come, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Glenn Bob, get me another Budweiser. This one here's gone warm.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, like I said, why anyone believes these people or a single word that passes their lips, I will never know. You know, as far as I'm concerned, their credibility shot to hell. Oh, and I got to correct you on a point, by the way.
Yes.
You picked up on the for-profit media meme of the Russians invaded Afghanistan. They didn't.
They were invited in, yes.
Correct. Just like we, or if you want to look at it the other way.
Just like we were invited into Vietnam.
Correct. By the same puppet regime that we set up there. You do realize that we set DM up, right?
Yeah.
Under Eisenhower.
Yeah, I mean, right.
Reason being there were supposed to be fair and free elections. But we decided
we would never have had anything to do with Vietnam were it not for the relationship between Eisenhower and Charles de Gaulle.
Correct. Well, it goes back even further.
Just like we would not have ever intervened in Iran with the CIA had it not been for the relationship between Winston Churchill and Dwight Eisenhower.
Right.
Because when Churchill asked Truman to depose Mohammad Mossadegh, Truman told him to go pound sand.
Yeah, but Truman was also instrumental in supporting the French in Vietnam. He was bankrolling most of the French effort in Vietnam, long before Eisenhower even showed up on the scene. At the time of Dien Bien Phu, we were carrying 80% of the financial burden.
But at the time of Dien Bien Phu, that was Eisenhower.
Yeah. But
because, among other things, Truman spoke fondly of the Declaration of Independence that Ho Chi Minh had drafted for the Vietnamese people that was almost drawn word for word from our own.
Correct.
Oh, and we have an answer from Ron in Raleigh. French Guinea is now called Guinea-Conakry to differentiate itself from its neighbor, Guinea-Bissau.
Right.
And it is a free French-speaking country. So I don't know which Guinean nationality this woman was, but she was reported to be an immigrant from Guinea. It would be much more convenient if she was able to speak French and therefore could follow orders in French, right?
Correct. I mean, it sounds a little too pat for my...
I mean, he just happens to be on a floor that has a maid who's from Guinea who happens to just speak French.
Uh-huh.
Because it really wouldn't have worked nearly as well if, say, she had been from El Salvador?
Yeah. That wouldn't work too well.
And I don't know, maybe there's a huge population of Guinean folk working in hotels in New York, but what I, you know, like I said, Cossack, what I hate the most out of this is the fact that a person who tries to live by reason and when these stories are just so rife with inconsistencies, It makes your head hurt.
Yeah. Well, and you have to remember, Strauss-Kahn was really not liked by the powers that be.
No, because among other things, he was no fan of all of that austerity crap.
Exactly.
And he really is, caviar or not, Porsche or not, a socialist.
Correct.
And so, in light of the fact that I can't imagine this was very difficult to set up. You know, this is troubling, not just to you, not just to me, but just got a note from Jude. She says, the situation concerning the charges of rape with the head of the IMF left me thinking that whenever there is a shocking event, especially one of sexual charges, it makes me ponder with a searching mind as to why now, and what also may be occurring simultaneously to present a diversion. Why now? Well, you know, we can do that. We can ask why now, because another moran that I had in my in the course of my day was the modern day 21st, what appears to be the 21st century equivalent to Bomber Harris. You remember Bomber Harris, right?
Oh yeah.
Had a real taste for bombing civilians during the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got a new one. I read it earlier today that, as a matter of fact, the British general who is in charge of some portion of the Libya response says that it's time to quit fooling around and, wait for it, start bombing civilian infrastructure in Libya.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, because all of those Libyans, what do they need with water?
Exactly.
Or toilets that flush?
Well,
or electricity?
It's the same strategy they used in Iraq, both in the first Gulf War and the second Gulf War, where they destroyed as much of the... civilian infrastructure as they possibly could. They did the same thing.
But aren't there pretty much worldwide accepted treaties, statutes, tenets, laws that say that you don't do that because it amounts to collective punishment?
That's the Geneva Convention, yes.
Isn't it considered a war crime to do that?
Yes, it is. War crimes are for the losers. As Curtis LeMay said, if we had lost the Second World War, we'd all be on trial. And that was Curtis LeMay.
Yeah. role model for General Jack D. Ripper, wasn't he?
Yep. Very much so. I mean, the guy was crazy. He really was. He was urging.
And wasn't he George Wallace's running mate?
Yes.
That's what I thought. Birds of a feather.
He was urging Kennedy to, carp bomb Cuba. That would have come across real well. But we got to go in there and destroy those launch sites, bomb the whole thing to hell.
I had a delightful afternoon yesterday, Cossack, because there was a whole afternoon of Tony Bourdain reruns.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them was his trip to Laos.
Mm-hmm.
And an entire segment that involved eating absolutely nothing, that was just him going with a team of people who go over field after field after field, trying to recover some portion of the 4 million unexploded munitions that still live in the soil there that we dropped.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you remember a few days ago, maybe a week ago, they were raising such a ruckus about how brutal Gaddafi was for daring to use cluster munitions. And nobody bothered to point out that, by the way, we are not signatory to the ban on cluster munitions.
Yeah, because we used a lot of them.
All the time.
Well, I remember when the Afghan war first started, we had this little problem because the cluster bombs were basically the same color as the packets of food we were dropping.
Correct.
Jesus. Yeah.
And, it's a big deal if Gaddafi's doing it, but we don't bother to point out that we do it too, all the time, everywhere. We don't care about collateral damage. That's why we call them collateral damage. They're not human, they're just collateral.
Collateral. Yeah. Cossack, good to hear from you, brother. Sorry you got cut off Friday night. Trust me, it was not intentional.
No troubles. I know what it's like.
We've made it halfway through the show, so, the thing crapped out at about 8 o'clock Eastern time, so I've got my fingers still crossed. Take care.
All right, take care, Bob.
See you, Cossack.
Okay,
bye-bye. Yeah, I think Jude's point is well taken. What is the IMF story in the way of, Strauss-Kahn story? What is that in the way of a watch the birdie moment? What is it they don't want us to see? Could it be the story of the significant number of people, all of whom at the same time marched on the Israeli borders over the weekend, and were many of them were summarily killed? Could it be, the hey, let's commit a war crime in Libya committee? You don't know. Or could it be the European monetary the looming crisis itself that was meant to get the not right wing enough guy out of the way? The problem here is that if we had a functioning, legitimate, real fourth estate media instead of its for profit counterpart, its for-profit golem, whatever, this wouldn't be quite so much of an issue. But in a world where Mickey Mouse will soon be depicted with a SEAL Team 6 hat on, it's quite another story, isn't it? Or at least it seems so to me. Let's go to the phones. 25 past the hour. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
What's up, Jim?
Your story tonight about, so many things. Pursuant to my emails that I sent earlier.
I thought the reference to the Dreyfus affair was quite appropriate.
I just don't believe this man did this. I'm sorry. I mean, you've got means, motive, opportunity, okay? I mean, I don't know what this man's sexual history is, but I don't think he is some type of satyr that would allow his libido to imperil his position. If anything, I think this guy may have been set up. I don't know.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Jim, he does have a history. I mean, he had a history at the IMF, and he has a history, allegedly, in France. But in both of those instances, those were people that he knew that he used the power of his position to, or did or did not, depending on the findings. But it occurred over a period of time. This is not that. This is so radically spontaneous as to not make sense.
It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, it's another diversionary Reichstag fire type thing to me. Those are the things that crept into my mind when I heard this. I mean, why would this man do something like this?
I mean, he's one of the most powerful men on the planet.
It just, to me, it just doesn't pass the common sense test. It does not.
Is it because he was one of the most powerful men on the planet that he felt like he could do that? I mean, is that the sort of logical leap that one has to, the logical chasm one has to leap in order to sell this to a prosecutor? Because at this point in time, that's the way I'm thinking. You know, it's like an episode of that thing on NBC with the dum dum, you know, where the detectives have to sell the prosecutor on this.
I don't know. I mean, you know, if you stayed in a hotel in New York, you can look at the TV that's in that room, and they advertise to certain agencies that will provide, you know, certain sexual services.
Well, a good concierge can find that too.
Yeah, I mean, if the guy was that horny, I mean, it seems to me as though he would probably have used one of those. I mean, the whole thing just stinks to high heaven as far as I'm concerned. This doesn't compute.
But French politics is a nasty business. Can you see Nicolas Sarkozy ginning something like this up?
Well, or the DGM Bureau. But or certain of his operatives in the Quai d'Orsay, yeah, probably. I mean, you know, people will do anything. I mean, just like your previous caller referenced Barbara Harris and Curtis LeMay. I mean, these people are not crazy. They are not psychologically or psychiatrically crazy. They can't hide behind that fence. They do this stuff because they love to do it. I mean, Barbara Harris' strategies proved did not do anything to break the German resolve whatsoever. If anything, it increased it. Because the more Barbara Harris bombed, the more you saw little swastikas or paper flags bearing the swastika emblem with, "You may break our walls, but not our hearts." And it was proven that the civilian bombing of Germany did not do anything to hasten the end of that war. This was just retribution on his part. That was part of Bomber Harris' psyche. And Curtis LeMay was an active participant in the bombing of Germany in World War II. And he just wanted to, they wanted to test weapons. They wanted to test the effect of civilian bombing and this, that, and the other. And I mean, some of these guys, I hate to say it, and I have been, I've been around enough of them to know that they enjoy this.
They like it.
They like it. Yeah, they like it. Hell yeah, they like it. And they just, if you know, it's part of their professional prowess. Look what we did. Look how we did it. And, you know, that's the sad, sick thing about it. And when you look at the fruits of their labor, I'm afraid the fruits of their labor certainly aren't very appealing to me.
No. Nor should they be to anybody who counts him or herself a member of something approaching civilization. And that's kind of why when I saw the story that the UK general, what we need to do is bomb the water supply, you know.
All you do when you do something like that is to engender hatred that will last for a thousand generations.
Yeah, and you polarize the resistance.
And there's a method to their madness because they realize that what this will do in the minds of the people who have been bombed is to create the spirit of revanche or revenge. I'm going to get you back. You may have got me this time, but I'm going to get you back the next time. I mean, when you completely pull out all the stops and you completely destroy a nation's resources and their infrastructure and everything, you may bring that nation to its knees for a very small period of time comparatively in the scope of time, but eventually it will come back to haunt you.
But, you know, Jim, you've got that long sweep view of history, as do many of us here on the Horn. It's hard not to watch things like, you know, read about things like let's destroy the civilian infrastructure in Libya and not think about, Marcus Aemilius standing on the crest of a hill watching the destruction of Carthage and thinking, you know, one of these days somebody's going to do that to us.
You brought that up quite ably on one of your programs the other night.
And, we think like this, but nobody else in the country does? I mean, is that how far the actual working knowledge of history has gone?
Bob, I don't think we really have any working knowledge of history anymore. Honestly, truly, as I said before, history is not linear, it's cyclical. And when I look at, for example, the work of Bomber Harris, and, you know, I saw the destruction of, you know, I know what the Nazis did to Rotterdam. I know what they did to other cities as well, like Coventry, of course. Now, let's say that Coventry, Churchill knew about, but he did not want to tell anybody about it because he felt as if he did anything to protect Coventry, they might discover the fact that the British had broken the code that the RAF was using, the Luftwaffe was using, and that he basically sacrificed Coventry. I don't know. But that has been brought out.
True. And then Michael offering a counterpoint, if you will, to the question about Monsieur Strauss-Kahn. He says, with all due respect, would Bill Clinton do something so foolish with Lewinsky, with the world watching, the most powerful man in the world? And I understand that people's motives are sometimes simpler than any of us would give would scarcely credit. But yet at the same time, as with the previous cases that involved Strauss-Kahn himself, with Bill Clinton, that was a long-term process.
Yeah, it was.
And it wasn't a matter of walking naked out of the shower and then immediately committing rape.
That just simply does not compute with me, as I said before. I mean, I just don't think a man in his position and his authority with that much to lose would behave himself in that manner. It just doesn't compute.
Well, David in Tennessee is thinking along the same lines as you are, Jim. He says, the aspect of this that fails my smell test is this. Exiting the shower, he gives chase out of his room, down the hall, buck naked, and entering another bedroom, he forces the maid to service him. David said, it's that another bedroom part that doesn't add up for me. Those rooms are locked almost always. Having stalled him off that long, she could have simply kept him bouncing around the hall, naked, continuing avoidance. But poof, he has another room available. And David says, I see it as quite possible that she was a setup, approached and serviced him, and then began to look for her mythic dime.
That could very well be true. Very well be true.
I mean, the Quai d'Orsay boys think like that, don't they?
They can be pretty rough. I mean, any group of, listen, any type of, the Quai d'Orsay being the Foreign Office or the Deuxième Bureau, which is the French equivalent of our CIA or the British equivalent of MI5 and MI6. I mean, these boys can come up with some real nasty plots. I mean, that's what they're paid to do.
Right.
That's exactly what they're paid to do.
And see, the sad thing out of all of this is if the guy actually was a counterpoint to the austerity crowd, and then even by virtue of the fact that he's going to have to answer charges, even if he wins the case in court, he still loses. Because he was on the verge, all the reporting says he was getting ready to step down at IMF because he was going to go to France and run against Sarkozy.
Well, that could very well be a motive on the part of Sarkozy to use the Dozier Bureau or whatever secret or, you know, organizations the French government employs to embarrass people and, you know, to do this kind of stuff that, well, that J. Edgar Hoover used to do to undermine the importance and the reputations of important people who they don't like. I mean, these people are really mean. I mean, you have no concept of the meanness of some of these individuals who sit down, and that's exactly what they're paid to do. They are paid to sit there and think of the most embarrassing, the most damaging things that they can possibly do. They are the ideological Bomber Harrises and Curtis LeMays. You know, when you brought up the name of Bomber Harris and stuff like that, and I've said this before, I've seen the work of Bomber Harris. It was before my time, but I've seen many newsreels of it. And I wonder how Bomber Harris felt over his cigars and brandy when he may have seen the newsreels of the Berlin Zoo.
Well, if he was as you describe, he felt I would hazard the guess that he probably felt a sense of satisfaction. Wouldn't you?
Probably. You know, some people simply have no conscience. They have no respect for life in any form, whether it has 2 feet or whether it's a quadruped.
Right. Exactly.
But, I mean, I've been able to watch a lot of horror films about World War II. The Nuremberg trials and documents, that's horrible. And what the Nazis did, that was horrible. And it's a pity so many more of them did not pay for what they did than did actually. Like Mengele and Barbie and people like that and somebody and Eichmann who escaped for so long. But I mean, honestly and truly, there's got to be a point when you try to take, for the sake of posterity and for the sake of what's going to continue on, you know, what's going to be the long-range ramification of this? And how much hatred are we going to engender so that within 20 or 30 years, when these people who have been bombed and destroyed are going to be able to recover the means to come back and visit your sins upon you?
Or never mind my sins, but our sins upon future generations who didn't even have a hand in it.
Well, exactly. I mean, and that's just the point. I mean, the concept of limited war is completely gone out the window. I mean, everything's on the table. They don't care who or what. I mean, even though they may accomplish certain objectives and things like that. That's what war is about. I mean, war is an extension of national policy, as von Clausewitz said. And once you've got your opponent on the mat, then try to be done with it. But no, they always seem to go one step further than that.
Yeah.
And they always want to leave another war in the future for us to come back and fight.
And, you know, Jim, you mentioned being familiar with the works of Bomber Harris. You know, within the RFK, he was referred to as Butcher Harris.
He had a lot of enemies. He had people who did not care for his tactics. And, studies were done, you know, indicating exactly how effective were his tactics. And at that particular time, a lot of those bombs were just dropped. I mean, I don't know if they had the benefit of the Norden bomb sight at that particular time. That certainly enhanced the ability of the RAF and the United States Air Force.
Yeah, I just really screwed up. I meant RAF. In the RAF, he was known as Butcher Harris. Because the dirty work that he sent people to do was not done by the people actively involved with a great spirit of esprit de corps, joie de vivre, whatever. And, you know, for people, I mean, anybody who's ever picked up a copy of
Vonnegut Slaughterhouse 5 and read it, is exactly. familiar with the work of Bomber Harris.
Exactly. I mean, you know, that was... Dresden was just a horrible situation. I mean, and the bombing of Cologne and other cities like that. Of course, the bombing of the East End in London at the outbreak of the war. And what is so ironic, and if I'm not mistaken, and somebody out there I'm sure will correct me, but the initial bombing of civilians in World War II was actually started by mistake by Germans that got off course. And they didn't want to come back over the channel before the bombs. And so they thought they were bombing a certain military target when, in fact, they were bombing civilian targets. And that's when everybody just went totally ape. And, of course, the next night the British bombed Berlin, and the first casualty of that particular bombing was a poor circus elephant named Betty.
Jesus.
And then, of course, Hitler comes up before a group of people at the Sports Palace, and he made that speech, and they thought that he was on some kind of wild drug then, the way he was screaming. For every 100 kilograms, I will drop 1,000, and this, that, and the other. And the whole thing was, you know, almost like throwing a ping pong ball into a room filled with mouse traps loaded with other ping pong balls. It just started a horrible chain reaction. Just like almost like nuclear fission.
Yeah.
That the whole thing is just, like I say, number one, this French IMF official could very possibly be the victim of some type of arcane plot hatched by the French Secret Service or whomever, or who knows. But it just doesn't carry weight with me.
No, and, you know, David in Tennessee with an addendum, Jim, he says, if it's an attack that Strauss-Kahn began, I want him taken down for a horrid forced act. He says, 1,000 times no, I am not an automatic doubt the woman guy, but this is anything but a straightforward case of man forces woman. And this is
the very act itself. I mean, oral sex. I mean, I kind of find it hard to imagine someone being able to force someone to commit that act. I mean, you can keep your mouth shut, can't you? I'm not trying to get graphic here, but I mean, I'm just looking at all points of the whole thing.
You would think, yeah.
I mean, how can you actually force someone to commit fellatio on you when they don't want to? And, you know, you can keep your jaws locked and say no. And deny interest.
Well, there's teeth involved.
Exactly.
I mean, is the evidence going to be now that he was naked but had a firearm?
God only knows, but I know that
no.
He failed. He'll be in jail for next Friday until he comes back to court again.
And Kathy out in Arizona just added in, Jim. She said, Bob, remember when the French Secret Service sank Greenpeace's Rainbow Warrior? Jim is right.
Like I say, buddy, I've dealt with some of these people, not directly. Well, yes, in certain cases, I have been in situations in which I've heard stories being told after a certain amount of alcohol has passed, and people like to tell their war stories and things. For example, like some of the stuff we did in Vietnam about the guy I knew who used to love to tell the story about how many ears he could bring back when they doubted his initial report of having taken out a village. And so the next time he got into a war situation or a fighting situation, in order to prove what he did, he sent back huge bags full of ears. I heard that over a bar in Arlington.
Jesus. Well, you know, as far as the French are concerned,
he just thought that was the greatest thing in the world and slapped me on the shoulder and said, what do you think about that? And I just looked at him and I said, very nice to meet you, sir. You have a good evening. And I walked away.
Yeah. And, of course, with regard to all this being a French affaire française, it must be borne in mind that there's a reason that the word we use for all of this, espionage,
is French in origin. Some of this stuff they invented.
Yeah. And, you know, it will continue, and it will continue to get worse depending on whatever means they have deemed appropriate. Well, look, you've got all the callers on the line. I've said my piece, and you have a good evening.
Well, thank you, Jim. You too. Bye now. Jim always has good information on topics like this. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Some more information. So apparently Joseph Stiglitz, you know him, he's the other economist that used to be the head of the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
He's written a lot of books on you know, how the war has cost a trillion. Basically, he had a conversion and he sees, you know, basically income distribution and the IMF should be used in a different manner. He's not with the IMF, but this is what he said about Strauss recently. Strauss Kahn is proving himself to be a sagacious leader of the IMF, as he concluded his speech to the Brookings Institute. Ultimately, unemployment, equity are the building blocks of economic stability and prosperity, of political stability and peace. This goes to the heart of the IMF mandate. So Strauss was leaning the IMF in a way that the big money boys, oh, no, can't have that. So Strauss got the kiss of death from Stiglitz, you see. And him chasing some woman down the hallway.
Naked.
You know, come on now. Now, I'm never going to be like, oh, God, you know, not believing that these people don't partake in rape and whatever else. But they don't get caught, you see, unless it's time for them to get caught. Like Elliot Spitzer time.
Whoa. I didn't even think of Elliot Spitzer in this context, but yeah.
And so, no. I'm not, and you know, I'm not feeling this. I'm thinking this is, I think this is all about him not running the game because they're trying to screw up the developed countries now. They got to get it right. So they got to get rid of him. And, you know he's a socialist in the French sense. I mean, he's the head of their party, right?
Right.
Oh, he was going to run under that banner. And so he's not a Gaullist, okay? So let's get it straight. You know, he's not a big fan of the Anglo-American type of capitalism. So I'm inclined to think that he pissed off the wrong banking cartel. I'm sticking with that.
Well, I think your analysis probably has a lot of merit. So you see it more of a financial, a global financial matter than dirty politics coming out of a wounded Nicolas Sarkozy.
Well, there could be that, but I'm just looking at, you know, if he's getting praised by the likes of Stiglitz and stuff, you know, who turned on the money people, he's hated now, you know, it's a bit fishy. And the whole setup is just too weird. It's like...
Well, and I guess we don't have to worry about the J.P. Morgan Chase economist guy.
Well, see, and then there's that. It's like, yeah, okay, I don't mean to just jump to the conclusion, sometimes you have to work for a bank to understand your job. But, sorry, how many banks does this fool work for? And they're all the same type of banks of the big five, you know, those banks, the banks that are immiserating people around the world. And the IMF is, you know, almost died out after the Argentina debacle, but it's back now because of this collapse. And it's being wielded like some sort of hammer. They just agreed to some more money to Greece, but guess what? More privatization. So the people of Greece are being represented by a Greek who can't even speak Greek. Okay, let's get that straight, first of all. Okay? And he is not working in their best interest. He needs to take his happy butt back to the U.S., where he spent all his time before all of a sudden he was, Prime Minister of Greece. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you just wake up one morning and...
It all smells to the high heaven. It's like, dude, how are you going to accept another bailout? You need to say no. So that is...
Well, isn't that an attempt at a buy-off from the notion that they might have decided to sort of resurrect the drachma?
Well, yeah, but see, they need to carry through with that because they're only protect. The problem with Greece is that, A, the exposure is French and German banks. That's where the bailout money is going. You see how that works? But they turn around and blame labor. But the problem with Greece, they don't know how to collect taxes. So they blame labor, and then they fuck the people over. And they give the bailout money to the French and German banks that demand privatization. You know, it's a nice little circle. A circle of hell for people.
And so we can anticipate that there's more of the same coming for Portugal and Ireland now that this guy's out of the way?
Well, no, Portugal just also was extended some sort of, I don't know if it was 120 billion euros. I'm not too sure of the figures, but they also accepted some sort of bailout as the people are, like, exploding. And the problem with this latest Greece shenanigans is that I don't know how Merkel is going to sell that to her constituency, but we'll see about it. I mean, it's really painful to look at because the euro is pretty much done, you know. And
well, that's what I was about to ask. Is the euro itself about to take a powder?
The thing is this shit can be propped up, I guess, for a while, but the sort of the real metrics on it, it's not functioning right. You cannot have the total destruction of people's wages, the safety net, expect them to work for half the wages, and this sort of spiraling down constantly with no prospect of growth.
Well, what happened? I mean, what happens? You say it's French and German banks that have the most exposure. What happens to the and in particular the German economy if the euro goes to hell?
Well, see, that is the problem, and this is the thing that is if you are sort of a bit of a German phobe, you're like looking at this and thinking, what the hell? Germany is about as damn powerful as any of the other major countries in the world right now. This country, China, Germany. I'm sorry. I've been to Germany. I love the country. It's very interesting. But, you know, hey, I'm not exactly comfortable with them in this position. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know. And that is exactly what's going on. They are hella powerful right now. That's the thing. Massively so.
Frighteningly.
You know. So anyway, I don't know. It's just so random. I sent that to you right away. I thought, oh no. And then when I thought about him, I'm thinking, oh yeah, shit, he's been trying to do some different shit with the IMF. Which, let's keep in mind, the IMF is just evil. I don't care who's the head of it. But this Lipsky person, whoever the hell he is, we'll see. We'll see what's up and coming next. Because no one in that level of the higher echelon, if they're able to dodge jail after destroying the world economy, I'm sure they're going to take one to task for a little rape.
Well, it's like your email said to me this morning. Since when does somebody get upset about a maid getting raped?
Right.
Not being dismissive, but, you know, you see.
The
world is on its ear.
Yeah, no, and it's brutal. And so I am not going to be, I don't live in some dream puff world where when someone gets murdered, raped, exploited, that they're going to find justice. That ain't how it works.
No, especially, and I repeat, especially not in this country.
Right, and so, you know.
But the NYPD gets handed a ready-made case on a silver platter?
Yeah, right. I mean, all of it is just like, huh?
And see, that's the question that Jude asked a few minutes ago. What is this the watch the birdie for, Sandra? Is it the financial shenanigans that you've just described? I mean, that's what seems closest to home now that you lay it all out. The idea that things might not have been as draconian and hateful for the people who were going into hock to this mob.
Well, you always have to keep in mind And now, you know, this is just, I'm just like looking at this and making, you know, obviously it could be wrong, but you always have to keep in mind that the major banks aren't solvent. You see what I'm saying?
They're not liquid.
Yeah, they're broke. So, you know, there's always that rolling in the back of the mind that the system is propped up and it's crooked and it ain't working right. So, anything like this, you really have to sort of try to factor it into the overall global capital market finance oligarch hell. You know? And listen, I have to say, did you read Krugman?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
did you see the pearl clutching on Sunday?
I didn't know. I heard about that, but I haven't had a chance to see it because today I was able to turn in my last take-home final. So praise be it, I'm done.
Done but good done?
Well, I can't say I'm now Sandra with a master's done, but, you know, this semester's over with.
No, so you get, coffee breaks over back on your head, you get a breather?
Well, yeah, but I'm sort of freaking out because of the cost. You know, I'm like, oh my God, you know, how am I supposed to pay this? And I want to get loans, I don't know what. So I'm kind of, you know, marginally freaking out, but that's neither here nor there. I don't know. Anyway, listen, let me just read this one thing. According to Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, Mr. Obama has told Democrats not to draw any line in the sand in debt negotiations. Now, Krugman writes, well, count me among those who find this strategy completely baffling. At some point, and sooner rather than later, the president has to draw a line. Otherwise, he might as well move out of the White House and hand the keys over to the Tea Party. Dude is real done. Okay?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what I meant about the pearl clutching on the Sunday shows. Because he said, I forget, you know, the Meet the Prostitutes or which one it was.
Oh, God.
But... He caused real bowel disease.
Well, because aren't they trying to run this game that the sky is falling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what he said was he basically threw down a marker and drew the line in the sand and called the right wing and the baggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers, etc. He called them on their BS and said, fine. I mean, it is as close to burn, baby, burn as you're ever going to hear Paul Krugman get.
Well, because it's absurd. There's no reason for this to be happening. And he's as scared as I'm sure you are, and I certainly am, of what the fuck Obama's going to do if he's not drawing sand on this. What, is he going to give Boehner the $1 trillion in cuts? And no taxes too. You see what I mean?
Well, this is all stuff that we began sweating.
I know.
Back when he said, "Well, you know, we're going to extend the Bush tax cuts for the rich, and then we'll debate that during the election. And if they want that debate, I'm happy to have that debate." Remember that?
No. And I thought to myself then, I'm like, "Ew, if you do this, so." So, of course, I'm thinking now, well, what is he really? Because the way Krugman describes the budget, I love it. He said it's, two-thirds insurance company and a military, basically.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just am, like, wondering what, you know, it's not funny because I have no confidence in this man that he's not going to capitulate and do something really horrific to what's left.
Right, because Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are three places where if they are no longer de facto third rails, they have to be guarded as such. And you do. The only way you're going to do it with these incrementalist right wingers is to draw that line in the sand and say no, nothing past this. No. Absolutely. Right. You're not going to get here over my dead body.
Right, but if you look at, you know, what the budget is, if it's all programs for Americans over 60 plus the military, you see, you know, a third of it is everything else. I mean, that's...
Well, you know, you and I are apparently up at roughly the same times of day. Because when I was first switching on the idiot box this morning, you were sending me that the IMF piece.
Oh no, I've been up because I have so much work to do. I have had like 3-4 hours of sleep.
And so I'm sitting there, and you know, last week Morning Joe was real pleasant because there was no Joe in Morning Joe. And bless her heart, Mika Brzezinski did a really good job. It was a much better program.
Okay.
But he's back. And what do I wake up to, Sandra, but him sitting there pontificating about, you know, how Newt Gingrich has chickened out and Mitch Daniels has chickened out and that they're running away and leaving poor Paul Eddie Munster Ryan flapping in the breeze. And, you know, Gingrich called him a radical and blah, 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 blah. And then he says, when are we going to sit down and have a hard conversation with the people who are under 50 and explain to them that they're not going to get their Social Security when their parents did and they're not going to get their Medicare when their parents did? And I mean, I hadn't had my coffee yet, Sandra, decaf. I mean, I was still rubbing the sleep out of my eyes. And I was halfway to the television before Agnes went, honey, he's not right there. Because I was going to strangle him.
Well, no, I mean, it's incredible because, you know, we're in the process of watching them, you know, destroy these programs that no one in their right mind wants to have them destroyed. And we have to rely on a Democratic Party and a president who we're not sure of, when all he would have to do to completely ensure reelection is to go on the damn TV, text a message to the fucking phones saying, we will not cut this ever, never, ever. And he would be reelected.
That or, you know, what the right-wingers would like to do to him.
Well, no, I'm just saying if he would just step up and say the social safety net of Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid.
Yeah, this messaging is not complicated.
Off the table, we have to come together in some other area. End of story. And if the Republicans want to come up and say out loud, well, we want to cut it no matter what, they're already begging him to please stop your Democrats from demonizing us about getting rid of medic, they're already in trouble. So he could just send them over the edge and guarantee his election. But for some reason, and I'm scared to know what the reason is, because maybe the people who are running Obama are telling him, well, no, you're the man who has to dismantle the FDR program. And maybe that's the plan.
Well, I keep going back to what Alan Grayson said that one time. You know, Mr. President, if you could take on anything you wanted to, regardless of the political realities, what would it be? Entitlements. That was his answer. Entitlements.
That's it. Okay. Well, see, then I guess I'm not tripping.
No, you're not.
Not tripping. Well, listen, I'll tell you somebody else who's clutching pearls. Is Cornell West. Did you read that Chris Hedges article?
No.
Oh, shit. You know, Cornell West is just, you know, he's been duped, and he just is, you know, sick beyond belief by what, you know, is going on. I mean, it's worth just reading if you get a chance, because I didn't realize that Cornell West did 65 campaign stops. You know, for Obama.
Oh my God, I didn't either.
Yeah, he said now he calls him the black mascot of Wall Street oligarchs and a black puppet of corporate plutocrat.
Whoa.
And now he has become the head of the American killing machine and is proud of it. Okay, so, you know, that one, he's disillusioned, at least.
That stings.
Yeah, anyway.
So well, that, and that's got, well, that's got a, I mean, really, Cornel West has got a really, I mean, that's got to be under the skin.
Well, you know, Cornel West, he's never been shy about saying what he means. Hence, Larry Summers ran his ass out of Harvard.
And now to be handed that.
So I don't really know. You know, I don't really know. But see, it's disturbing because we're hearing today that Geithner is raiding the government workers' pension. You know, because I guess we've hit the ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah. As a, right.
Right, but you know, you realize this is, I'm not saying it's made up, but it was never an issue. And all of a sudden it's an issue and can't draw the line in the sand.
And I'm, you know, no, Sandra, I'm totally lost by that.
Can't, I don't understand it.
Can't, well, I mean, it begs the question, if not now, when? If this is the line you can't draw, what line can you draw?
No, but no, I'm still stuck. I'm still ringing.
I mean, I know it's lighthearted and shallow, but did you happen to see Fred Arneson's take on Obama on Saturday Night Live this weekend?
Oh, no.
It was like a town hall, but he's at the point where he's so cocky and full of himself that he's running it like a stand-up act, and he's got a cigarette in his hand. I ain't hiding these anymore. I ain't hiding nothing. You want to call it Obamacare? How about you call it Kill Bin Laden Care?
Oh, no.
Lifts up this empty glass of ice. Yeah, baby, bring me another one of these.
Oh, no. Wow.
But that's, you know, that's the defining, and what I'm getting at is that's the defining moment of the presidency now.
Okay, but I'm still stuck on what you just said about Grayson. Now, this is a quote that he posed to Obama, and that was the answer?
Yes.
Okay, so let's just think about this. So you're telling me that if this man, or when this man is reelected, instead of taking a decent turn, you're telling me that he can just go ahead and try to finish off reforming and, you know, reforming in quotes?
Yeah, wants to reform entitlements. If he could do anything he wanted to, he'd reform entitlements.
Well, see, he'll be able to do whatever he wants to if he gets reelected. You see what I'm saying? On some level.
Yeah, well, see, I'm envisioning a Congress in control of the Republican Party, House and Senate both, and I just see a 4-year lockdown.
No, but no.
Well, no, they'll go along with it.
If he wants to reform, that's the ideal climate for him. But see, let's get past this crisis here. I'm like scared because the people don't seem to matter, and the people don't understand how invested we are in what the government provides us. There is that. And trust me, from my own experience in teaching beginning government, Lord help you, Jesus, these people don't know shit. Anyway, listen, I gotta go.
Why does that make me want to cue up the line from Being There?
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, speaking of that, I saw something. Somebody's comparing Obama to Chauncey Gardner, and not because, obviously, he's not talking about his intelligence, but the sort of serendipity of the whole experience.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's hard not to, and it's hard not to compare him to President Not Sure. And, you know, now we've got the Donald finally jumped the shark and said, nah, it was all just a big, you know, ruse.
Oh, that was after they threatened to replace him on The Apprentice, is that right?
Yeah. So Mike Huckabee, did you notice that Mike Huckabee bowed out?
Well, I understand that, but in the meanwhile, Trump was able to run Obama out with his birth certificate, or then again, maybe that was part of the Bin Laden story. I mean, all of it is like a hideous Shakespearean play sometimes. So
yeah, and it makes you, it just your head just hurts trying to sort out, you know, what's reality. It's like bad acid or something.
Well, no, the whole Bin Laden thing is definitely, what I hear somebody say, they said, damn, he looked like some homeless dude in front of that TV. It was just like, ain't that true? You know, I'm like, damn, $1 trillion for that? You know, all of it becomes this theater of absurd, and it's just like, I'm not really believing it. It's too weird. You know, Obama's bounced. You know, in the polls.
But no, he did. He did sure enough, Sandra, scare the water right out of half of the Republican field. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the Huckabee's gone.
And he has Newt Gingrich pandering to the old folks who know that they don't want their government programs cut. He ain't stupid. All right. That's what I thought was quite interesting about Newt Gingrich. It's like, oh, all of a sudden, Ryan is some sort of radical. Good call.
Well, except for the fact that he proposed almost the very same plan in 1995.
Right, but you see he's not planning it. He's not stating it again. I mean, listen, he's a joke. I just think he's trying to get paid. He ain't for real. I mean, I don't even know. I think it's going to be one of those sort of mealy-mouthed vanilla weirdos like Mitch Daniels or was that Pallente or whatever?
Yeah, and, you know, I can't...
Or Romney.
See, but it can't be Romney. Because...
What, he's a Mormon?
Yeah. I mean, you got to have somebody that's going to bring the Baptists and the foot washers and the snake charmers and the floor rollers out because they're the base.
Well, see,
and they're not going to get behind a guy who thinks that when he dies, he's going back, not to, but back to Planet Kolob.
Oh, God. Listen, you know what? Planet what?
Planet Kolob.
Listen, is that another religion that has, like, planets in it?
Oh, hell, didn't you know this?
Well, I stay far away because I see them people, them white people on bikes, and I'm out of the way. I don't know nothing about it.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh no. When you're a Mormon and you die, you as a male, okay, let's get things straight here. As a male, when you're a Mormon and you're a exalted 32nd degree noble lumpkin elder in the church, you die and you get your own planet. And that planet ain't inhabited by no 72 virgins. It's a whole planet of wives.
Okay, listen, I thought black people couldn't go to heaven until like 1980, is that right?
1975, you guys got grandfathered.
So that was my, you know, that's what, when I hear something like that, you know, I just sort of tune out. And when the white boys on the bike with the white shirts are riding like they crazy, I tune out. But I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and you know everybody comes from Planet Kolob, KOLOB. They come from Planet Kolob, and Jesus and Satan are brothers.
Well, I thought that some bitch was talking to somebody from a stream.
No, that's no. See, that's why we need a program. You can't keep the weird mythology straight. Joseph Smith, and what I wouldn't give to be able to go to New York and see the Trey Parker and Matt Stone. It's called The Book of Mormon, the musical. You know, the South Park guys. Yeah, it was like nominated for 14 flipping Tonys.
Oh wow! Okay, funny.
But it's absolute, utter, complete, total insanity. And if the fundamentalists and the Baptists and the Methodists and all, ever get even a whiff of Mormon theology, you know what? They'll be voting for Barack Obama quicker than they can spell socialist.
Well, so. Okay, so you think that he has a hard row to hoe, and then so we just have the milk toast too, right? One of those ones.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, they're never going to get down with a Michelle Bachmann or a Sarah Palin because there are too many fundies out there that remember that it says in the 32nd chapter of Flip-Floppians that women are supposed to be quiet in church and wear their hair up.
Right, right.
So no, they won't be down. No, it'll be Palenty. Is that what it'll be? A battle royal between a pair of what? Wally Cleavers?
Well, I mean, who's gonna? I mean, at this point, after he got rid of, who's gonna step up? Although this decision coming up with the debt ceiling, I mean, I really don't know. I mean.
Now see, if Arnold hadn't just recently split up with Maria Shriver, he could have gone ahead and driven the birther tack right into the ground and thrown in for his own right.
Schwarzenegger can't run.
Why not?
Well, because he's not. You have to. What amendment is that?
Natural born. Well, it's the 14th.
No, but I thought you had to be actually born here in the U.S. to run for president, though. So
that's literally open to debate. It's not a closed question.
Oh, okay. Well,
because remember, John McCain was not born in the United States.
Oh, right, and Obama's a Kenyan. So what am I talking about?
See?
Listen, no, but Schwarzenegger burned himself in California. He didn't do so well, so I'm not too sure what his cachet is at this point. But I don't know if anyone wants to face.
Well, I don't know if, and see, this is where we put on our little tinfoil hats, Sandra.
Who wants to run this shit?
Well, no, it's not. He's doing just fine by them. That's why they've got a posse of clown car inhabitants.
Yeah, no. That's what I'm saying. When he's talking about, oh no, don't draw any lines. This is what we need to be focusing on. Is the jokes are the Republicans. We need to turn our attention to where the real center of power is, which is the executive. Now, let's just resign ourselves to that. So, what is he going to do?
I think it probably plays out the way you described, or the way we sort of set it up. He winds up with a Republican House and a Republican Senate, and he gets reelected because, frankly, nobody in the real business world wants anybody who's gonna play games with the debt ceiling. And then with the cover of, well, I have to deal with the Congress I've got, not the Congress I want, kind of haul out the old Rumsfeld business. We're just going to have to reform those entitlements. And you 50-year-olds, you know what? You're not going to get your Social Security till you're 75, and you can just damn well get used to it because that's what makes America great.
No, but see, up those 50-year-olds.
Me too!
You know what I'm saying? I'm like, that's... anyway, listen, I have sort of, still daydreaming about that farm in New Zealand.
Well, if you don't mind, daydream me a little cottage next door, would you?
Oh, God, I will. We could take road trips down to the South Island. Good night. Anyway, have a good evening.
I'm going to try, Sandra. You too. Thanks a lot. Bye now. I never know, because I'm kind of in the moment with the show and the conversations and everything. I don't ever want to sound like Art Bell or George Norrie or any of those seed-saving, Glenn Beck. I don't want to do that ever. I want to be a rational person who lives in a rational world and makes rational choices and understands the world from a rational place. But Jeebus, how do you do that? We're in the middle of a bunch of wars. Despite the fact that the Walmart's still open, the economy is not okay. We're being profitized, corporatized, capitalized, and merchandised till we're running out of flesh. States are slipping into states of damn near outright fascism. I mean, the state Senate president of Arizona today issued a flat-out threat. He said, by God, if they protest in Arizona, Russell Pierce, who is a Nazi, by the way, that's not a slur, like, oh, what a Nazi. No, he's a Nazi! You know, goose-stepping, you know, shiny black boots, Nazi! He spoke to the Greater Phoenix Chamber of Commerce last week. And he was asked how he'd respond to protests by public workers against the so-called conservative agenda. Pierce said, I've spoken with the sheriff, talking about Joe Arpaio, and he has some nice buses that hold a lot of people. We've also got some tents with a view. He's not kidding. You know, I get a two-day break or so when the watchword around the house is, hey, Bob, keep it to yourself. Monday will be here soon enough. I kid. And you sort of take a breather and sit back and hope that, you know, maybe there will be something good come along. And then it's this. And it's this I am, and you know, Sandra makes a compelling case for the IMF thing being a bankster thing. Getting a little too close, if you know what I mean. Under the heading, the subject line, never ever, I get this from Robert in Australia. Here in Australia, Prime Minister John Howard, before becoming Prime Minister, made the statement that we'd never, ever have a GST. That's a general sales tax, is that what it is? On his second term, he claimed a mandate from the people despite not mentioning it in the election and introduced a GST. Never, ever, never, ever trust a poly. Politician is all I got from that. And so at least maybe we're being told, you know, that we're not getting any never-evers because Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are off the never-ever list in the first place. And like Sandra said, I take that personally. See, the politicians don't have the guts. No, well, yeah, it's a matter of guts with the right-wingers to go after Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, for the especially Medicare, for those who are already getting it. Goods and services tax. Thank you, John Fox. Goods and services. It's a national sales tax, right? But they don't have the guts to go after people who are drawing now, because that would be political suicide, as it should be. But when I saw that probably unindicted murderer, Joe Scarborough, this morning, talking about needing to have a tough conversation with me, you know, the under 50 crowd, that we're the ones that are going to get screwed to the wall, pinned like a butterfly on a wax. God, I got mad. Because I've worked, I've paid into the system. Everybody my age has done this, but you know what? We just need you to be patriotic about this and understand that you can't have it. No. And it's kind of like what Cassie pointed out a few months ago, that her generation down there, you know, early to mid-20s, can't even imagine being 60. So all they've got to do, they think, is mollify the people who are drawing it now, or may draw it sooner than me, and everything will be okay. because most of them will be dead by the time I'm drawing it, and there won't be anybody to, because, you know, the group that they're afraid of, the reason they're afraid of them is, A, they're drawing it, and B, they vote. We had an election, by the way, here in West Virginia on Saturday. It was a primary to find out which Colican will face which Colocrat to be the governor of Colistan. The turnout was 18%. Guess who those 18% were? Hint. It wasn't anyone under 50. You got a real good view there on Saturday of who votes and who don't. It was a weirdly timed election, deliberately done, I'm sure, by the Colocrat. But it was deliberately done to get the people they knew that would come out and vote. The people that would come out and vote were the ones who were told to come out and vote by their bosses in the coal companies. And the older voting contingent. And see, I don't think that older Americans are willing to sacrifice me, just as I'm not willing to sacrifice Cassie's generation. But the geniuses inside the Beltway have decided that's the way to, you know, that's the way to bet it. That in America, that has been told by right-wing for-profit media that Social Security would never, ever be there for those young'uns, well, that now they can make it a self-fulfilling prophecy because they've told the big lie long enough. And I guess it's a question of whether or not, you know, this isn't about race, and it's not about gender. This is about demographics and money. If the American people, working people, for whom Social Security is something more than a nice reward for a life long lived, for whom it is the ability to continue to live. If the working class will stand up against these thugs, we've got a chance. But at this point in time, too many members of the working class have been seduced by Radio Rwanda. And having been seduced by Radio Rwanda, are willing to do roughly the same thing that the people who heard the original Radio Rwanda were willing to do to their neighbors. And to allow Social Security to be put off for the under 50 crowd is, for a lot of the under 50 crowd, especially knowing what the unemployment picture looks like in this country now, a death sentence. That's all it is a death sentence. And it's not a pleasant death. It is a goddamned grim and terrifying one, in which death either comes suddenly or is the protracted set piece of misery and starvation. We used to joke about cat food. Then Kate set us all straight. The cat food is more expensive than the canned salmon and the canned mackerel. And it's a moment like this that I am scared to death of my own countrymen. Because unlike you, the Horn family, they're not nearly as alert and plugged in and comprehending of what's before us.
They're wrapped up in Dancing with the Stars. Oh, my God, there was an accident on the set last week. Did you hear? They're concerned with American Idol. Oh, we're down to three. And if someone in a position of authority tells them, well, we're sorry, that's just how it shook out. And that's just how it shakes out. And all we've got in common is our misery. And the least as we can do is share it. And that doesn't play worth a damn for me. Line's open if you want to get in on the conversation. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. Hey, welcome to the program.
You know, it just goes to show that these politicians are more cynical of us than we are of them.
I think you're absolutely right, David.
And here's the thing about I notice about Democrats, progressives, and liberals in particular. I notice that there is such a focus, and it's a blinding focus, Bob, on national politics that they've never really figured out a way how to get people interested in local politics, because it is extremely hard and difficult, and it is a bit boring in a lot of circumstances. But that is exactly the problem that we face, because it is the ultimate distraction to look at a president and then to place all your hopes and aspirations and dreams and look at some pictures and just say, oh, my God, we got to reelect him. We got to reelect him. And then just to focus on that.
Right. And, I mean, I know what's coming. I know what 2012 is going to look like. I have no illusions.
Right. And here's the other thing. This is the other thing that people didn't pay attention to. I'll bring it up again. You know, people are talking about, I'm not on the re-election Obama is a certain campaign bandwagon that a lot of people are. I'm on this bandwagon. See, people didn't pay attention to the fact that Donald Trump was tied to Jerome Corsi and Joseph Farah. Joseph Farah was feeding him the talking points to go out there and talk nonstop about the birther issues, to put it back in the bloodstream, or to pump it back up again. Now it's already pumped up again. Tomorrow is the day where I believe everything is coordinated in the right wing. I mean everything, even the most mundane, I believe it. And even if I'm wrong, it's still good to be that way, because it means, oh, if that was just mundane, that was mundane, but you are paying attention to it that sensitively, you're more aware. And the other thing is that, so the book comes out tomorrow by Jerome Corsi. But not only that, Eric Erickson is doing a scheduled conference. You have to invite yourself with Donald Trump, and he's going to ask him the tough questions that he has problems with. Now, again, you have these two.
Now that he's not at risk of torpedoing his presidency again, mind
you. Right. Now that he's not at risk of torpedoing his presidency. Now, here's something that a lot of people don't think about, and they shrug it off, and this is what I say.
I mean, isn't that a case of closing the barn door after the horse is gone? I mean, I'm just asking.
Well, you know, here's the thing. If you look into the people that Trump... See, this is the thing that people need to stop paying attention. Stop paying attention to the fact that Trump is a goddamn racist. Stop paying attention that he's a million-dollar, multimillionaire reality TV star. Stop, 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 stop. The thing to pay attention to is the people behind Trump. And when I say Jerome Corsi, and if you don't know that name, you should look it up. If you don't know the name Roger
Swift Boat...
You should look up the name Roger Stone. And if you don't know Joseph Farah, you should look up Joseph Farah and then see who they're connected to and see who they are constantly in contact with, the right-wing radio.
Well, wasn't Joseph Farah first put into business by Richard Mellon Scaife?
Well, you know, here's the thing about it that people don't understand. Joseph Farah, this is why history is important, people. Joseph Farah was the first people who told Rush Limbaugh, you need to do a column. Okay?
Yeah.
You need to do a column. That's what he said. You need to do a column. When everybody was laughing at him about his ambitions about being a right-wing operative shell company, he really did have the plan. And he really did plan it. And he really did see what he saw in Rush and said, you know, this guy knows what he's doing. He's talking a bunch of bullshit. And see, that's the thing, Bob. That's the thing. When people say they're crazy, no, they're not crazy, because they talk on the phone, they have these conferences, they know what they're doing. They're just creating distractions. This is not crazy. This is all just a money-making operation. Keep funding the money to these companies, and they don't have to do any work, really. They don't have to worry about going bankrupt, is what I'm saying. They don't have to worry about that.
Oh, and by the way, you get the toaster for your comment about they're more cynical about us than we are about them.
Well, it's true. I mean, you look at what's happening in the world right now. You look what's happening in this country. You know, people always tell me about the fact that here's the other thing. You know, when you look at what's happening right now in our country, and the fact that when you have somebody who says, well, you instantly have people say, well, you know, Obama's it's the wrong thing to do. Obama's a Sherlock for the next election. He's a sure look. Really? I wouldn't be so sure when you have a black man.
Oh, no, they'll fight it. They will put up the Kabuki theater in rare form.
They want people to stay home, Bob. That's the thing. And if you pay attention to what's happening on the internet with the brouhaha in every which way, whatever's coming, what misdirections out there, you start to see a bigger picture. And the bigger picture is this. You do not count it out until we see the candidate and until we see the ramp up and the run up and until we pull that after Election Day. And then after Election Day, you can begin to say, maybe Obama will be president. That's the way I look at it. That's the way I look at it when it concerns politics like that. And
well, no. I'm not saying I'd take the family fortune and go out and put it on Obama on November 6th. I mean, no.
Right, right.
But I am so cynical. I am so rottenly cynical at this point, David.
I am more
than I'm. No, are you? Are you?
Yeah.
Now, wait.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Like I said, I'm not sure that this isn't. I mean, that the people who have the real Jed Clampett folding up and walking around money, the kinds you can resuscitate Milburn Drysdale with, I'm not so sure that they want rid of him. I think they like it just where it is, especially if the Social Security Trust Fund and Medicare are going to be turned into godforsaken voucher systems that mean that Wall Street gets that money too.
I think the thing that...
Square? I mean, you know...
This is where we go down the crazy tunnel, Bob. We go down the crazy tunnel.
Go down it. I'm living three levels in. I mean, it's all Dungeons and Dragons, and I can't find a neutral good anywhere to save my soul.
I'm in the journey to the center of the earth machine with the Pat Boone song playing.
Yeah, I know. Oh, you're gonna love this though. This came in from David. This is a David Mutual Admiration, David Society Mutual Admiration Society
right,
moment.
Right, right.
David in Tennessee voted you the toaster.
Okay. Thanks.
And then this comes from David in South Carolina. You're going to love this.
Yeah.
Under the subject line, because, you know, there you are talking about Farah and Corsi and the birth certificate business.
Yeah.
Under the subject line, more love from South Carolina Stan state government. I mean, you're just going to fall all over this.
Oh, I could tell already.
South Carolina state employees are going to have to furnish long-form birth certificates for all their dependents, or they will lose health benefits. That's where this has gone. Is the state of South Carolina going to pay for all of these birth certificate requests? This, even though only short forms were issued at birth. The party of freedom despises freedom. It costs a minimum of $12 if you're in Columbia. If you're not in Columbia, it costs more. Now, let's remember, there are a lot of state workers who are, you know, that color.
Right.
And they've got health care benefits, maybe. So if we can deny them some health care benefits for their dependents based upon the fact that they can't come up with the long-form birth certificate, well, then it's a net positive, isn't it? It's just win-win for everybody. Go get Lee Greenwood.
It looks like, if you look at the playing field right now, the fact that all of these people have declined, it almost looks like they're just, and if he does run, I will I will concede with you that it is not a likely chance unless they do some serious rigging. But it almost looks like they're just kicking Romney. Get out there! Get out there and run!
And yet, I mean, it's so sleazy. Huckabee sort of kind of endorsed. Did you see that? He endorsed Donald Trump right before Donald Trump that bailed out. Well, you know, I think Donald Trump would be a better president than Barack Obama because Donald Trump's a man of business and he's not a socialist.
You know what's interesting about the whole Trump thing, and this is the way my mind works. I never really paid attention to what. I want to know, okay, who's feeding Trump? That's what I wanted to know. Who is feeding Trump? Because he's out there, he's putting his reputation, credibility on the line, whatever reputation, credibility he has left.
And he was also putting that fox on top of his head on the line, yes.
Yeah, he was putting that, the fox, too, yes. The fox that was, that needed some sustenance, that he was starving, so it wouldn't move around on camera. Yeah, you're correct. But the fact that he went out there, and the fact that he was connected to, if you look in articles, how he talked about how he got the book passed to him, he had an advanced book of the Where's the Birth Certificate book, and he's had conversations with Farah and met with Corsi and all of the right-wing operatives. But it makes you wonder, because tomorrow is the day where they do the book launch, and then that's where they have the radio interviews. And it makes you wonder, like, are all the right wing going to be receptive to this guy? Are they going to all let him on, or is this going to be on the bottom of the dial now?
And well, but whoever winds up opposing Obama will be the last great hope of humankind.
You know, the thing that makes radio so shady, when talk radio so shady in general, is the fact they don't have a schedule where they tell you where everybody's going to be. They just suddenly appear. Here I am, and here's what I got to say. It's almost like they don't want anybody archived.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, I can almost make predictions of that stuff just based on the way that the right wing crap hits my box on any given morning.
But
I mean, I know at 5 o'clock in the morning when we get up to get the kids off to school, right. I know what the right wing talking points are going to be that day. And yeah, so that means I can predict with some degree of accuracy who you'll see where and when.
Will he get? Do you think he will get to be on the mainstream radio dial? Like, will he be on Sean Hannity? Will he be on Laura Ingraham? Will he be on all these shows? That's what I'm saying. They have a
who? Corsi?
Yeah, because
it's been, you know, I shared one of those emails with you one night. They are booking every minute of his life for the next month right now.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he was going to be on the low end of the talk radio dial because of the fact of, you know, Laura Ingraham, she's mentioned it on her program that she thinks this is nonsense and we have to get off this, and then
she does that for her credibility, and then she'll bring on him and say, see, I want to make sure that you get both sides to the story.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he'll be. I predict all over the place.
You think he'll be on Hannity? Okay.
Oh, Hannity has no shame. I mean, Jesus. You know, I guess you heard the. I mean, we talked about it here on the show, and then the John Stewart apparently is a listener because the next night it was on the Daily Show about the business with Common.
Right.
And he had the same quote that I had. The quote, you know, "Hey Obama, suck on this" from Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
Well, in the course of announcing that he was not going to seek the presidency because Jesus told him not to, you know, all Mike Huckabee did was up his creds with the little weirdos because he said God told him not to run. Okay?
Yeah.
And who has he got for a conversation there with him? Ted Nugent. Mm. Really? Ted Nugent.
You know, I think Huckabee took a minute and looked around the Fox studio offices, and then he said, run for president or have a talk show. Run for president or have a talk show.
Well, the guy's building, you know, I mean, they pay well over there. The guy is building a McMansion in Florida. Now, remember, this is Mike Huckabee who comes out of Arkansas and was darn, well, not quite. I mean, he had a, you know, he had a church hustle going, so he wasn't exactly starving to death. You can kind of tell that looking. But he's never had any real folding, walking around money. And he's got it now. And why put yourself through something like that when you can maintain the hustle that the only reason I didn't run is I am obedient to my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and he told me not to run, that I could do more good right here speaking truth to the American people on the only medium that actually speaks truth and ain't all filthy, liberal, godless, heathen communists like the liberal media are right here on Fox, my brothers and sisters. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, that right there tells you all you need to know. The whole thing with Fox. Oh, by the way, Bob, you should mention the campaign that the site that just got activated. You haven't mentioned on the program tonight. I was waiting for it.
You do it.
So Angelo at Stop Beck.
Yes.
He has created a site for his Drop Fox campaign. So if you go to dropfox.com. You can get all the details there.
Oh, and God, I wish Angelo the best. He and between him and Color of Change, they are why Glenn Beck is going away.
Mm.
And he deserves a great deal of that credit. And if he can do the same thing to Fox, I mean, you know, there are campaigns out there now, I guess, against Orbitz. Are you familiar with Orbitz? Book a plane, book a hotel, book a car, Orbitz.
Right.
I think they're not the ones with the gnomes. They're the ones with the flying saucers. See how I differentiate them?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a campaign against Orbitz to get their advertising off of Filthy Fox.
Well, that's good to hear. So if I'm going to let others get a chance to call, but if others want to visit that, that's DropFox, just as it sounds, .com, and check it out. I guess we'll have to talk next time about the, I don't know if you saw the episode of the history of the Celtic Britain episode.
Yeah, I tried to go. It was a non-starter.
A non-starter, huh?
Yeah, I really wanted to see it, too.
I'll have to look for a different link for it.
But you know what, what is it? There's something around here that's got, I was talking to Agnes the other day, and it's got her all in a dither. I'll have to remember. There's some, it's the new Pirates of the Caribbean. Oh, they are, the Tribe Kincaid is all on fire for that
I
one.
Will, however, send you the new Saul Williams album that just was,
Cool.
Put out.
You know, I played that bumper a little bit ago. I played It's Money That Matters by Randy Newman.
Right.
I was this close to playing Saul Williams and Scared Money. That would have been cool too.
Yeah, that would have been cool. All right, Bob, as always, it's nice talking to you.
All right, you take care, David. Bye now.
Later.
Pop culture correspondent and possessor of something on the order of his 152nd toaster. That's David calling from Maine. David in Tennessee, under the subject line, "This ain't funny, McGee." He says, you know, I make jokes. I deal in rude japes. He says, this has no humor to it at all, talking about his brother in the fraternity of David's, David in South Carolina. And the story about birth certificates there. He says, there are black state employees in South Carolina that have kids covered by insurance that were, as was their lot at the time, born at home, recorded in the Bible, and brought forward from that moment. Will Rogers, when asked about his birth certificate, replied, well, being born at home, I don't have one. Out in Oklahoma, if a man is standing in front of you, we kind of take his word for it, he was born. That same rationale will not keep the oldest kid of a state highway guy that shovels hot asphalt for a living on the state insurance down South Carolina way. Says David, I may throw up. There's no end to their hate. There is no end to their hate. Mind-boggling, isn't it? William asking, how do you take a breather? Because I said something about taking a breather over the weekend. How does one take a breather? I can't find one thing positive, no matter how hard I try. Not only looking at the issues with the globe, wars and such, and the issues concerning this country, I see the floods coming in the South. Hell, the damage from the tornadoes did is now off the radar, and who makes the choice? Who loses their homes or not? No matter how I look at that, I find it troubling. It's like there's this mentality, out with the old and in with the new and the rest be damned. I thought everyone was equal and find no equal in this. We just don't live in a reality one can place a stake in. We live in a madhouse. Now, not to be too much of a smartass, William, but how does one take a breather? One word, laudanum. I'm kidding. But that is how it feels. And yeah, I'm glad he mentioned the floods. And of course, Haley Barber said, you all's on your own now. I got some fellas to carry out my furniture out of my lake house, and it's up high and dry now. But y'all on your own. Of course, I have a feeling once the numbers are tallied, the fine folks that run those 13 casinos down around Tunica, Mississippi, they're not going to be on their own. They'll have insurance, and they'll have FEMA. By the way, apparently Ron Paul is at the forefront of the assault on all things that make this place tolerable. He's running for president now, for real, and he shows up talking to Wolf Blitzer. And Blitzer says, on the whole issue of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, if you want to see that agency ended, Ron Paul, at sort of half-crackly, folksy, well, if you want to live in a free society, if you want to pay attention to the Constitution, why not? It's a moral hazard to say that government's always going to take care of us when we do dumb things. I'm trying to get people not to do dumb things. Besides, it's not authorized in the Constitution. You evil old ass. When people do dumb things. Like what? Like what, Ron Paul? Like live in the path of a tornado? Because you're going to have to depopulate Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina. If you want to keep people from doing dumb things, like living where tornadoes land. See, in the land of the personally responsible, you're personally responsible when you get hit by an act of God. And God's a mean one, and I have no problem blaming tornadoes on God. They're awful. Seems easy to be the author of those. And by the way, this in from Gene. I mentioned Planet Kolob earlier, talking with Sandra. One hitch, Bob, News Ninja Gene says, if you're a single Mormon male and you die, you can only be an angel. No gangbang planet for you. You're stuck in the lowest level of the celestial kingdom. Wow. I guess under the present circumstances, that would mean that all gay Mormons have to be angels instead of getting their own, what do you call it, gangbang planet? Whew! Yeah, the other thing Haley Barber said was, there's no excuse for anyone to die in this here flood. None. Y'all been warned in plenty of time. Get to high ground. Hey, welcome to the program.
How are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. My name's Mike, by the way.
Hey, Mike.
I want to be careful with what I say because I don't want to be labeled a conspiracy nut or person, because I tend to stay away from conspiracies as much as I can. And I think we might have talked about that at one time, not too long ago, that Elvis is not in the nursing home yet. John Kennedy is not with him either. But have you read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman? by John Perkins?
I have not read it cover to cover, but I have read excerpts, and I know what its topic, its subject matter is.
Okay, and you've seen him on, you've probably seen some YouTube interviews with him as well, right?
Right.
Okay, and the premise is that there are people who out of college are recruited by like CIA front groups of businesses, and they're consultants, and that they go to typically third world countries and talk to the leader, the president or whoever, and say, you know, look, we can, well, first they examine what the economic situation is, the social situation is in each country, and then they propose a plan to build highways and schools and things like that. And then they tell them that we can do this for you, and you'll become a wealthy person, and but what happens is, though, using IMF money or whatever, they write up this loan that can basically never be paid back. Typically, one good example is Jamaica, a lot of South and Central American countries.
Haiti.
Right, exactly. And what, I'll just give a couple, in his book he mentions that one of his first assignments was going to Panama. And I, what was the name of the democratically elected president? I can't remember. Torino or something like that. I can't pronounce it. I just vaguely remember it. But he presented the plan to him, and the guy said, you know, I know you're going to make me a rich man, and I was elected by my people, and I'm representing them, and I don't want your deal. And a couple weeks later, his plane crashes into the mountains. The same deal was presented to the president, the democratically elected president of Ecuador, I believe. I may be wrong, but you know, people can check it out. And he refused it, and his plane crashed as well. So anyway, I bring up this book because it's strange to me, and nobody's made the connection, but there are some accusations, you might say, that Obama was involved with a CIA front group. It's called DICT. He wasn't an attorney when he got out of college the first time. He had a business or an economics degree. And he was recruited by this company that, according to my search on Google at least, it was a front group for the CIA, and it was called Business International Corporation. And now, I don't know if this is true. I haven't been able to substantiate. I'm just reading what's out there. So, I want to get some feedback from you on this. He lands up in Pakistan staying at the house of a guy who would later become the interim president after, I think, the one somewhat recent assassination. Back in the 80s, right after he gets out of college, a 22-year-old young man with a bachelor's degree lands up staying with this dignitary in Pakistan. So there's a lot of other things to read, but the more that I read about this, I wonder why this guy was able to get bin Laden, get in and out of Pakistan with no problems, I'm thinking this guy really has knowledge and connections with that area that no other person that could be